My daughter was just 4 when she started asking and wondering about death. Just like the parents in the video, but she'd be asking us what happens when we die. And we'd talk about what all the different things that people believed. We knew that at her age, she needed something concrete, something tangible, some way to make sense of this thing, this confusing part of life. So one of my friends in seminary suggested that we should get her a goldfish. She was a pediatric nurse. She said that will be a great way to teach her lessons about death. But by the time we got to the 3rd goldfish, I decided it was the worst possible advice for a sensitive little kid. But it was certainly concrete. Sometimes we talk about the idea of heaven or living on in some other world. Gracie was never really sure about that idea. But for some reason, she loved the idea of reincarnation. Like Nathan in the video, we'd have a good time trying to imagine what we'd each come back as, like tigers or maybe a penguin. We really got excited for a while about Santa Claus or princesses. Although, to be honest, the particulars about who we might come back as was less important than the fact that we'd be together when we came back, always. So, you know, if she was a tiger, I would be a tiger. If she was Santa Claus, I'd be an elf or something. Gracie knew early on that although it is very confusing that we die, it's even more disorienting to imagine that somehow we could be separated from the people that we love and those who love us. It's this sort of reality that encourages us to put off thinking about death, to trick ourselves somehow to imagining that this is the kind of thing that happens to someone else, not to us, or its possibility is so remote, far, far off in the future. Actually, I've had many good conversations with people in their 90s who are pretty confident that death is far, far off, never going to happen to them. Death is like money or politics or sex, something we don't talk about in polite company. Like Eleanor said, it can be a taboo, even though, like these other things, it's one of the driving forces in all of our lives. Because even though we can try to live in denial, we all at one point or another come face to face with that piercing reality that all life ends. We are mortal beings. That life is in fact a fatal condition. And the mystery of death is one of the core realities of life. And then ignoring it or denying it keeps us cut off from something that otherwise connects us all in this life, here and now. But on the other hand, Unitarians, as you know, have long been taboo breakers. And our dealing with death has been no different, at least historically. In the 19th century, Unitarians felt that death should be treated as something natural, as a part of life. So we started what's known as the Garden Cemetery Movement, which actually became quite common, so that garden cemeteries is basically what you think of today as a very beautiful cemetery. Grandview Cemetery here in Fort Collins is a pretty good example of a classic garden cemetery. It just means that it's a beautiful place of where nature and life is present, so that as our religious forebears imagined it, the living can mingle with the dead, because they too were trying to engage this possibility that we all could remain connected, even when we seem apart. Even more, early Unitarians wanted to affirm that death was not that terrible final reckoning that the Calvinists at the time were imagining, but rather it was simply a part of life where we would return once again to the earth and to be, as poet William Cullen Bryan put it, mixed forever with the elements. Maybe it's this willingness to consider death as a part of life that has pushed our faith to be more and more a religion focused on the living. It's an interesting paradox where, by allowing ourselves to acknowledge death, to believe that it actually will happen to us, and to allow ourselves the time and the space to speak about it and those who have died with an openness and frequency. This practice paradoxically inspires us to live lives, to live our lives with more meaning and purpose, to embrace life now, today, to not put it off, or to imagine that somehow we have endless, infinite time, or that some other life other than this one is the real life. And just as much, we can better prepare ourselves for death by becoming more clear and intentional about our lives. What brings us meaning? What brings us joy? And by that, I don't mean the big, grand sense, but rather in the daily sense. Not even what does a good life look like, but rather, like Dr. Atul Gawande says it, what does a good day look like? For our days are our lives. And getting clear on this, we can know not just what we're living for in some grand theoretical sense, but for its real and specific meaning, so that as we come to die, we can know what a good life really has meant, and therefore we can also know when it's time to surrender to a good death. I'm so grateful for all you kids that started off our reflections today, because even though now I have journeyed with a number of families and individuals in the final stages of life and into death, there's a lot about death that remains confusing and mysterious, difficult, and sometimes scary. But this is why I'm grateful that we can be in all of these wonderings together, because no one really has the answer. We're all just trying to figure it out, and in the dialogue together, the discovering together, the journeying together, it can also be beautiful and silly and joyful as we remember pets and people that have meant so much to us. And in that remembering, we can still feel connected and a part of each other and a part of it all. This is why I cherish this service each year. I look forward to it every year, because it's when we set aside the time to remember intentionally those who have died and to feel our connections with them, which are still very much alive, to listen for their wisdom and their love, which is still with us. So we create our altar of remembrance and we spend time embracing death so that we can more fully embrace life. And so I want to invite us now to keep this conversation, to keep this dialogue going as we turn again into these sometimes difficult conversations. I'd invite you to turn to someone near you and share a little bit about the sculpture that you made, and maybe about what you think about death, what happens when we die, or maybe just a little about someone that you're remembering today in our service. Our altar offers us a visual reminder of all the many spirits that have been a part of our lives, those we've loved, and the ways that they continue to be a part of our lives, in our hearts and in our memories. By remembering them and allowing their spirits to be present here with us, we prove that love remains more powerful than death or distance, and that no part of life ever truly leaves us. We affirm that all of our ancestors and all generations that are yet to come are somehow connected to us and with us here and now. This morning, I placed three pieces of photographs and names here of our ancestors of our faith that I invite us to come into connection with this morning. First, on the far side over there, I put a photo of Lewis Howard Latimer. He was born in 1848. He died in 1928. Lewis was an African-American inventor, patent expert, draftsperson, and poet, abolitionist, and organizer, and a founding member of the Unitarian Church of Flushing, New York. In the words of Reverend Elizabeth Wynne, like Latimer, May we be courageous and stalwart in our daily interactions, creative and iterative in our work for justice. May we mark our small victories while never losing sight of the vision of liberation and the transformation it will require in each of us. May we be worthy of his legacy. And then next, in the center, I place the photograph of Reverend Albert D. Orlando. He was born in 1950. He died in 1981. He served the First Unitarian Universalist Congregation in New Orleans. Reverend D. Orlando was at the forefront of desegregation and civil rights. Despite threats and actual violence from white supremacists and also our U.S. government. From Reverend Wynn, like Reverend Albert, may our moral center be steady under pressure. May those of us with privilege never be seduced by ease or comfort. And instead, let us choose integrity again and again. May we be worthy of his legacy. And finally, here I put the name of Reverend Mary Leggett. She's the minister who served this congregation in 1902. She was a member also of the Iowa Sisterhood. Now, this was a time when there were very few female ministers, and Fort Collins was surely not the easiest place to be a Unitarian minister of any sort. 1902. Like Reverend Leggett, may we be willing to tread new ground, to follow our call, and to be courageous in our faith. May we be worthy of her legacy. All of these photographs and names and the other memories that we've placed here and all the many that reside in our hearts, they are all connected to us still. Let us take a moment now to breathe into these connections, to hear them still with us, present. Let us feel the tender thread of love and loyalty that connects us all still. Let us breathe into the joy of knowing love, of being loved, and also the heartache of death. And yet that hope of love continuing, love's presence through it all. For all of life as it has been and as it yet may be, let us pray. Spirit of life, whom we know best in our own loving and being loved, hold us as we remember those we have loved and those who have loved us. Bless our offerings that we have made here on this altar. Though these small objects may not seem like much, they are giant in the love they hold. For any sources of sorrow, may our tears release us from pain and hold the possibility of transformation and new life. Spirit of life, help us to know we are not alone in our grieving, and to help us to come to that peaceful place which we can take what we've learned from those who have gone before into our own lives today. In this season that holds both loss and possibility, death and new life and new healing, we give thanks for this circle of friends, for the gifts of journeying together, the faith of being held in a wider circle of love. Just this morning, we are joined in joy and the reminder of new life as Brian Blakely reminds us that he has added 3 new grandbabies in the last 18 months as life continues on. We give thanks also for this religious community where we acknowledge death as a part of life, where we know a good death always comes by way of a good life, that all we have done and all we have been lives on in the friendships and memories of those we love. And so through it all, let us remember that the most enduring legacy that we leave is now and ever will be the love that shines through in our daily lives. Amen, and blessed be.